condition, 7.1. Distributed during the break. I would like to make that recommendation. Counselor Muse, from whose district it is within.
I move that the council agrees with the municipality adopt an administration policy respecting entering into a development agreement which would allow for 7-unit multiple unit dwellings in existing buildings located at 6755 Highway 3, Franklin Point.
And that is seconded by Counselor Chalk. Director McLeod, is there anything in addition you wish to add that you did not state the public hearing, or should we have that statement made again where the public hearing wasn't recorded? Counselor Charlton, do you think we should have Director McLeod restate for the public record on?
Yes, I think that would be helpful.
Would be helpful.
Yes, absolutely.
I think we did not video the public hearing, so if you would reiterate, Director McLeod.
Yes, Mayor Norman. A brief background on this item. The municipality's received an application for a development that would allow for the conversion of the existing 7-unit fixed roof overnight accommodation that's located at 6755 Highway 3 in Hunts Point to convert that to a multi-unit residential dwelling. The property is located in a Hamlet Core zone under the region's land use bylaw. And under the Hamlet Core zone, multiple unit dwellings of greater than 4 units are not permitted as of right, but council has incorporated provision within its planning strategy to consider such uses through a development agreement process. Policy 6.0-21 of the MPS identifies items that council takes into consideration when looking at development agreement requests. And policy 6-15 includes items that council can include within its development agreements should it choose to proceed with the development agreement process. So the public hearing we held this morning was part of Municipal Government Act's regulations pertaining to entering into development agreements. One of the requirements is that council hold a formal public hearing to solicit input from the public on the proposals. So some of the considerations specific to this application is that the area is a mix of low density residential and commercial businesses. As I mentioned, there's an existing 7-unit fixed roof overnight accommodation that is located on the subject property. It is not the intent to change the structural development that's located on the property, but to simply change the use from fixed roof overnight accommodations to long-term residential dwelling units. A couple of the potential options for council to consider is one is maintain the status quo and deny the development agreement request, or two is to enter into the development agreement with the property owner for this change of use. So staff has reviewed the application, is supportive of moving ahead as it feels that sufficient terms can be incorporated within the development agreement to mitigate potential issues. And as well, Planning Advisory Committee discussed this item and was supportive and recommended in favor of moving forward.
Any questions, comments? Counselor Muse.
So, of course, this is in my district. This building has been on the radar for at least 2 years, maybe 3 years. Some of the things that were said, there is no condo sold at this time. 7-unit place, and there's still 7 units to be sold. When he tried to sell the condos, he found out that he had to have a development agreement to sell the condos, and that's why they haven't been sold yet. Most of the people in my area have called me, or texted me, or emailed me, and they feel that it's better to have it as a permanent residence than to have Airbnbs. Everybody's saying about the litter being around, people with the fireworks and everything else. If Fireworks is usually people that come in for a couple nights, stay. We can't control them. We have a permanent resident there, which you can talk to them and don't, you know, they don't do fireworks. Especially it's illegal to shoot them right over the water, but people don't understand that. The parking, I heard that brought up. Person that owns this development has land up the road, and I can talk to him about maybe old level parking that he can park up, vehicles up the road. A lot of people bring up that it never should have been built. He could have built it at the time, the residential place, and we wouldn't be going through this. At the time, he thought he was gonna make more money, tourism, selling it out, and it didn't work out that way. COVID didn't help him. He finds now that he has to sell him his condos.
Other comments? Mr. Brown?
When we had the PAC committee, or the Planning Advisory Committee meeting, a lot of the questions that the public asked came up at that meeting, and there were a lot of concerns that were answered. The, like Councilor Muse said, if he had decided to build a 7-unit apartment building at that time, he would have been approved by use of right, so we wouldn't have been here. Parking units per rental unit or per property are probably the same, so parking would not have changed significantly. For Airbnbs, we have something in our land use bylaws now that allow for one Airbnb, one short-term rental per property. So that will limit the number of short-term rentals that are going in that place. You know, it's gonna stop a lot of the things. And I think when people questioned our ability to do a change of use, it's not whether we're changing it from one type of dwelling to another type of dwelling, it's whether we're changing it from a residential seaside park or farm community to a residential, because we already have people in there now, and I'm comfortable with changing the use from having people in it for one stay to having people in it for another stay. You know, it's not really changing the use, it's changing the designation. And I think having it as full-time rentals will have less traffic of people changing on a rotating basis, people coming in and out. I know in my district where we have short-term rentals, many of the people will go together and rent a place out, so you'll have 3, 4, 5 vehicles renting one place instead of one. So I think this will help with the traffic, it will help with the overturn, it'll help with not knowing who the people are in your community doing things. I think it makes for a better, stronger community to have residential places than to have short-term rentals.
Comments? Deputy Mayor Fancy, you take the chair.
Yes.
Just like to make 2 comments. A speaker just reminded us of the urgent need for housing within Queens. And approval of this will provide 7 more housing units within Queens. We also heard about the flood zone, the flooding. And I've looked at that carefully, and it says it's not premature or inappropriate due to the potential to create flooding. Changing a use does not create flooding. Anything that is there at this point in time is there, it happens. Changing a use is not creating the potential to have more flooding. He's not changing the structure of the building. He's not doing anything that's going to change the potential for what's already happening. So I am, for the reasons I've given, I am in support of the provision of more housing within the Hunts Point area.
Okay, Councilor Charlton.
I was going to articulate those comments too, and I can appreciate the concerns for climate change. That's real, we know that's real, and our council did change our land use bylaws to push our setbacks further. This development, as it's stated, follow the regulations at the time that it was built, and it is there. So changing the use is not creating new issues, and as mentioned for the housing, I know that 7 people could potentially have a place to call home year round. I will support this as well.
Okay, sir. Okay. Councilor Muse.
No, go ahead.
Couple of things too. When it was built, we didn't have the 100-foot setback from high watermark, mean high watermark. Now we have that. And for the height, it was mentioned this morning that the cabins were built on stilts. This building here is a lot higher than the cabin. And he also, when he put the foundation in, made it to be hurricane proof.
Yes.
So there's a lot of extra money into that foundation. So, I'm gonna say a hurricane won't come and take it, but you do. And like you said, now with the setbacks of 100 feet, we wouldn't allow it anyway unless we had the restriction.
Okay, is there any more comments before we go to a vote? Before we do that, I'd like to take the chair back to you, Mayor Norman, because I just wanted to ask one question. One question I have is that what was brought up this morning, just wanted to make sure that we're safe, I guess that's what I'd call it. What was brought about this morning, I know, and Mayor Norman had brought forward that, you know, that there isn't any change, but when it was brought forward about being the site's specific climate change risk, is this something that we should be concerned about us changing the zoning change with it being brought forward that this could be a site specific risk? I want to know from our point of view how safe we are of changing this zoning if this was identified as a site specific risk.
And I guess where it's an existing development, if it was a new development altogether, I think there would be more considerations for council in that regard as far as climate
right.
change risks. However, the existing building, it for residential use or short-term fixed roof accommodations, I guess it is still an occupiable building that was constructed under municipal regulations several years ago and in compliance with those regulations. So it's a risk, I guess, any shoreline property, I guess there's potential risk. And I think council has taken steps to try to mitigate some of these risks through new regulations under the land use bylaw, being further increased setbacks from the ordinary high water mark or top of bank, as well as elevation standards. Mention was made of the Municipal Climate Change Action Plan
yes.
and identifying some of these areas of risk. And
yes.
I think council has taken steps towards trying to mitigate some of those risks through the implementation of those new regulations. So are we going to be able to totally eliminate risk? Probably not. But I think council has taken positive steps in that regard. So.
Can I just further? What you're saying is that if it was a new build, the considerations would be different rather than it's already there, it's pre-existing, and it's just a matter of changing use.
That's exactly
yeah.
that's what this application is strictly for, the change
right.
of use of that existing development.
But that would apply if we were going to have a new build. Then
I
we'd
guess
have to look at all
new,
those.
The new regulations
yes.
would apply, that's right.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
thank you.
Discussion, Councilor Brown.
I just want to comment on what Councilor Deputy Mayor Fancy said, was that like Mayor Norman said, changing a use does not create a risk. This does not create a risk by changing use because the building is already there. So the footprint, the structure doesn't change. So by changing the designated use of it, we're not creating a risk. We're changing use for something that's in a risk area. I personally probably wouldn't want to live in that area, but we're not creating a new risk by changing the designation. And that's how
yeah.
I feel comfortable with this.
Yeah.
Any other questions before I call for the question? Questions called, all those in favor? Contrary, passed. Oceanside Drive, road naming 7.2.
guess the name proposed for this new road, Oceanside Drive, is acceptable to the planning department, as no same or similar road name exists. Under the region's road naming policy, it sets out that 70% of the people who own land abutting approve that, but where this private road is totally owned by the applicant, it's in accordance with policy, so council is supportive of the recommendation of renaming this road Oceanside Drive.
Questions to Director McLeod? Not all, I will call for the question. All those in favor? Contrary? 7.3, we just dealt with the development agreement, and now 7.3 involves getting rid of a development agreement for some of the property that they so can council can use. I know you're eager to make 7.3 as a motion.
I move that the council region please municipality through the discharge of the development agreement dated October 29, 2014, with property located at 800 Beach Hill Road and Beach Hill Farm, and identified as PID number 7005959.
Seconded by Deputy Mayor Fancy. And Director McLeod, would you explain to our listening audience who may not have our papers what a discharge is and why it's divorced?
Sure, Mayor Norman. Back in 2014, council at that time entered into a development agreement with the owner of 800 Beach Hill Road. In Beach Hill Farms, the development agreement allowed for the establishment of a dog kennel, training, grooming operation at this location. However, subsequent to the entering into the development agreement, the owner of the property never did proceed with this establishment. And as per any development agreement under provincial legislation, it gets recorded against the title of a property. So any new owners of a property, this agreement runs essentially with the land, so it's still in existence even under new ownership. So the current owners of the property has changed hands. The new owners wish to have this burden released from the title to the property, and the only way to legally do that is through a formal discharge of that agreement. So a copy of the discharging agreement is included in the staff report.
Any questions regarding the discharge of the agreement? Councilor Muse.
The person who has purchased this land wants to build a house to sell and rent. So we're just waiting for this to go through so that we can decide on the deal.
Questions? I'll call for the question. All those in favor? Contrary? And thank you, Director McLeod. And we'll call stop. Mr. LeBlanc, Development Management Clerk, Safety Office. There is a recommendation within the package for Region 6 Solid Waste. Councilor Hawks.
I recommend the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality approve Region and Solid Waste Management proposed budget for the year of 2023 and 2024.
And that is seconded by Councilor Gittens.
Mayor Norman.
Mr. LeBlanc.
Region 6 Solid Waste Management serves 13 municipal units, including the Region of Queens Municipality. The attached letter was received on December 13, 2022, as it is every year at that time, from the Region 6 Intermunicipal Solid Waste Management Committee, requesting Council's approval of the upcoming fiscal year's budget. Included is a copy of the budget for the 2023-24 fiscal year. So some details about the budget. The Region of Queens Municipal Contribution for 2023-2024 fiscal year is projected to be $13,790, which is actually decreased by $1,106 from the previous year. Provincial enforcement money for the entirety of Region 6 remains the same at $89,425. The Region of Queens received from the program's last fiscal year. It's anticipated a similar amount will be available this upcoming fiscal year. Diversion credits should increase as Divert Nova Scotia's performance was better than anticipated. As a result, provincially, diversion credits are up to $5 million from $4.1 the previous year. The region of Queens received $43,344 in diversion credits during the last fiscal year. That's what all I have for the details.
Questions of Mr. LeBlanc? Deputy Mayor Fancy?
Yes, the diversion credits, you say it was 43,000 last year.
Yeah.
So how much did it actually, did it overall increase, and what do you see as us getting back as a projected amount?
It should be a little bit more than that. Like, they drew from a pot that was 4.1 million. That pot goes up to 5 million provincially.
Right.
So I'd be happy to see 50,000, but it's hard to say. I would say we'll get more this year than we will last year.
Okay.
For sure. Yeah, the markets were favorable this last year, better than anticipated. There was some demand for fiber products. Refundables, the capture rate was pretty high. So we're getting
right.
more refundables back, so that just increases that amount available
right.
every year.
Okay.
Thank
you.
Just a question. The diversion credits, there's a pot, as you said, the province has.
Yes.
And so each region gets a certain amount.
Yeah, it's it depends on what you've diverted from landfill.
So it's based on the region's diversion, not our individual diversion. So our amount doesn't go up because our residents increase diversion or decrease diversion? Or
it is favorable to receive more money, yes. So.
Okay, so it's not based on the population or
no.
assessment. It's
no.
based on
no, it's good.
So the more our residents divert, the more money we receive.
Exactly.
Okay.
I'll call for the question. All those in favor? Contrary? Passed. Number five, appointment to Thomas Lowell Library Steering Committee. There is a recommendation from Councillor Charlton.
I move that the Council of Region of Queens Municipality appoint Councillor Vicki Amiro to the Thomas H. Riddell Library Steering Committee effective November 1st, 2022 for a 2-year term.
And that's seconded by Deputy Mayor Fancy. This was an oversight on Council who had terms of reference stating that the library, so it's like the library committee would be made of 2 board members from Queens. And we changed our committees earlier last year, and the library committee member was changed from Councillor Brown to Councillor Amiro. But we mistakenly had named the library committee person, or the library, the steering committee by name, rather than simply stating the counselor who's on the committee. So therefore, we wish to thank Councillor Brown for all his work on that steering committee. However, it was the intention of the terms of reference that it be a member of the actual library committee from Queens, and which is why the recommendation is before us. So are there any questions respecting that? If not, I'll ask for the question. All those in favor?
Is that a question?
I had a question.
Oh, you have a question. Yes.
Yeah. When I was appointed to that committee, I was appointed until the new library is built. I see now the recommendation is for a period of 2 years. There's nothing in there that reflects removing me from that committee, because I was appointed to that committee by name for the term that expired when the new library opened. So I think we either have to, you know, and I was not included in any of the meetings, even though I was appointed by name to that committee. So the committee has met without me. I was chair of the committee. So I'm a little upset about the whole thing. And I think we have to clear this all up, because I think we're putting a Band-Aid on a blowout, and we're not putting a big enough Band-Aid on it. We're not fixing the problem with any members, because now we're going to be changing people. So am I still on the committee? Is Counselor Romero on the committee? Do we now have three people? You know, I think these have to be dealt with before we can make this appointment official.
So we need a recommend, here's just a suggestion. Take the time to think of this. That the Council of the Region of Queens replace, or, I mean, I thought I explained it very well, that the terms of reference clearly stated two board members from Queens, and you are no longer a board member from Queens.
But
therefore, we can clear this recommendation by simply stating that appoint Counselor Vicky Amaro and eliminate Counselor David Brown. Counselor Brown?
The terms of reference do state that, but the recommendation of council that was voted on and ratified was that two members by name were there until the library was built. I think we have to deal with that if we're changing people. I think it leads to too much confusion if we leave. If we don't fix that problem before we appoint Counselor Romero.
Yeah, make a note.
So the terms of reference take precedence. So the terms of reference indicate it has to be two members of the library board, of which are Queens. And so when the motion was made to appoint Counselor Romero by council, that motion would have been out of order, would have been contrary to the terms of reference. So technically, you're not legally allowed to be on the committee because you're not part of the library board.
Okay.
So that covers that part of it. So there's no need to go back and rescind the motion, doing like that. It's just an oversight on staff's part, and I'll take responsibility for it. It was an oversight on staff's point to it when we appointed the new committee's member, specifically appointed Councilor Miro by name as a. So the reason the new recommendation is for a 2-year term to November 1st, or for a 2-year term, is because that's the term of this council. So we can't appoint somebody until the new library is built or whatever, because this council doesn't have jurisdiction to appoint somebody who may or may not be on council that particular time.
That answers my questions, and I withdraw my concerns.
Any Councilor Charlton?
I was just going to note too that when we initiated the new library process, we probably had no idea that we were still going to be here and that this would have been well on its way. So that's also, I think, a factor in that.
Any other, thank you for that. Any other questions? If I'll ask for the question, all those in favor? No. 7.6, Thomas H. Riddell Library Steering Committee new site selection. There is a recommendation within the package. Councilor Amaro.
I move the Council of Region of Queens Municipality approve the placement of the new Thomas H. Riddell Library on the lands of the municipality adjacent to the sliding hill at the end of Queens Place Drive, Brooklyn.
Point of order.
Seconded by.
Point of order. A similar motion was made and defeated at regular council meeting on June 14, 2022. It cannot be reintroduced except in the form of a new proposal that is sufficiently different in the terms as to constitute a different question as per Article 8 of Bruno's Rules of Order.
I am going to rule against your point of order.
And by what authority?
By authority of the chair. And I have consulted respecting motions that have been defeated. We follow our own set of procedures where there does not mention bringing back defeated motions. We follow Bruno's rules, which does talk about reconsideration of a defeated motion. And it talks about when you look at reconsideration of a defeated motion, then you also look toward the third level of which we base our rules on, and that is the House of Commons, our federal government rules. Within the House of Commons, if you wish in a sitting to bring back a motion that has been defeated, you have to give a notice of reconsideration of that so within that sitting, and a sitting of the House of Commons could range for several months. If it's not made within that House of Commons sitting, then the motion is considered dead on the table or dead on the floor, and it can be brought back in a subsequent sitting. Here in our chamber, we do not have sittings, but we do have meetings. The motion was defeated in April or June?
June 14th.
Pardon?
June 14th.
In June of last year. So 6 months has passed. If one thinks about how motions are made around this council, if whenever a motion was made, do then we have to send our clerk back to look 25 years on all defeated motions to see if that motion was ever defeated? It's my ruling as chair that we have had enough time lapse, 6 months of time lapse, between that defeated motion, that sufficient time has been passed to allow that motion to come back to the floor. And that's my ruling as chair.
In point of order, I agree with what you're saying. So the motion has to come back for a reconsider, and then it has to be three-quarters passed by the council.
It does not have, my ruling was, it does not have to come back. It's a motion of reconsideration. A motion of reconsideration is a motion that's made within the same sitting or within an immediate time frame of the decision. 6 months has passed. We're well past the time limit for a motion of reconsideration. I deem that that motion was defeated and it's now dead on the floor. Enough time has passed. Think about it this way, Councillor Muse. We make many, many motions. If we had to be aware that every motion that we're going to make in the Region of Queens municipality, that we need to check back in time to make sure that that motion was never made and defeated before, then we're looking back in 25 years. The reason for rules of order is to allow the majority of council to make good, just decisions on behalf of our citizens. 6 months has passed since a defeated motion.
So, it's still the other council. The first 4 years, we had to bring back a motion and do the same thing. We considered it. We'll have to drop that. I don't know how long the time frame was, the motion was made before. I don't think 6 months is too long. I still say that we have to reconsider a motion, vote on it that way, and then deal with it. It's the right thing.
My ruling as chair is this motion is in order.
Okay. I'm not participating in this recommendation.
A seconder for the motion, seconded by Councillor Brown. So the background of the paper states that the steering committee did as they were requested to do. They went out, they invested at other sites, and they realize that with all other sites comes a substantial amount of money, either to purchase, to supply water sewer, to do site improvements in order so that no flooding risks or contamination risks or a multitude of other issues. So therefore it was from the steering committee who was asked to look at another site, that there is no second site that they would consider based upon the costs involved in the project and the fact that these costs would reflect upon the build or would require more funds from the Region of Queens. So that is the background information from the steering committee. Their discussion.
Councilor Brown.
I think, you know, we got here a lot of it through a motion to ask for the second best choice, and I brought up at the time that the meeting was held that our terms of reference say that the committee has to bring back the first choice. So by what CAO McNeil said earlier, our terms of reference are a legal document, that would almost make the decision to ask for a second best choice a note of order argument, because we're going against our terms of reference. The committee has no choice but to bring back the decision for the best choice that they see, because the terms of reference were not changed. And you know, I'm still in favor of this position. I think the other locations raise significant costs, significant risk and liability to the taxpayers, and I think we've all seen lately how much we need a new library. So I think we need to move forward. Our pool committee just recommended putting a pool over there. So there's a lot of reasons that people go to that area. And I think the more we put there, the more things we use in the area where the Queen's Place is, the better it's going to be for people, because we're allowing them more access to more things at one time at a lower cost. So it protects the taxpayers' money.
It's been an ongoing process. I am a little concerned on the direction we're taking at this particular time, only because our last meeting we had four recommendations, which were really good, and you could easily cite which spot you would think that would be the best spot. But we were sent back with saying we weren't ready to vote on it because we didn't know what we wanted to do. Well, we're coming back with a recommendation for one, and I don't know if that's a better process of what I would love to have seen. But again, once that we came to us, and it was too late to talk about how we could have done this differently, because it was already out there, and we can't change what was already in the agenda, is to see a process saying that we, the Region of Queens, recommend the following site for the new library, and then we have the four areas, the same as we would with the volunteer of the year, and then we write that, and whatever we vote on, then we vote on one or the other, and then we could come forward with the conclusion. And it would have been, because when we go forward with one, if somebody doesn't want to go with this or not, you might vote, that might have been their second choice, but we've narrowed it down to one, and it makes it tougher to vote on. I would love to see, I'll be honest, I'd be rather see this defeated and come back with a different motion, which would state that would have an open ending where we could vote on the four locations we have, and we get it finished once and for all.
Comments? Points of discussion? Councilor Romero.
I've been debating this in my mind over and over and over about the placement of the library at Queen's Place. One of the sites that we were potentially looking at was the old Legion site, which is what we had, I think a lot of us had thought about and discussed, and it would give the residents on this side of the bridge an opportunity to access the services easier and outdoor activities, because we have the park there. So we have the green space, we have the parking, and it would probably benefit the businesses on this side of the bridge as well. But I do not want to impose any additional costs on the taxpayers It's a struggling economy out there. As we've seen, you know, things rise and rise in prices. And we have so many projects to look at and so many requests for funds that I don't want to go over any more than $3 million to build this library. We are in dire need of a new library building, and I think it's time we made a decision and we moved on. So I will be supporting this motion.
Any other comments? Councilor Carlton?
As many of you are aware, I originally was not supportive of this motion. I had a lot of concerns about the school use and the daycare use. There was also a preschool that used the library that unfortunately since has closed. My fear is that we will not have a library, as well as Councilor Miro, for those who rely on those services the most. I see those folks use that library, and the fate of our current library space and the building that it's in, given that it's for sale, that's a big concern for me as well. I do recall the library folks who were in the back there stating that they could go out into the daycares and things like that and take their library services out into the community. And although I would have loved to see, you know, this library potentially maybe near the waterfront, we have climate change concerns, as we're all aware of, and too many unknowns, and we can do things with obviously more money, but that comes at a risk to our taxpayers, and I too don't want to burden those taxpayers. And I would rather see a library at Queen's Place where our community can use it. We might have to come up with some alternatives to get some of those people who really easily access it, how we improve that for them, given where it is moving location. But I would rather see it there than our members of our community not have a library, and therefore I will support this motion.
Thank you, Councilor Charlton. And to your point, I do believe library services, you can order your books, and they can be delivered to your door. So, but if you to note your concerns for those who may have difficulty. Councilor Gidney?
I too have been giving this a lot of thought, especially over the weekend. Put a lot of points together. I believe that there is a this is open for discussion, and I think maybe this is a better place. However, I don't agree that we're following the correct procedures. So therefore, I will not be participating in the vote, because I think this is invalid.
Thank you.
Comments? I'm going to call for the question. All those in favor? Contrary? Pass. Discussion. Sale of municipal property. Councilor Amaro, I do believe you asked for this item to be placed on that.
I did, because I believe the format that we are selling municipal property needs improvement. We do have, of course, some certain criteria that we are mandated to follow under the Municipal Government Act, but I believe the Region of Queens needs a more detailed policy. I think that once council receives a formal proposal from an individual, company, or organization to purchase a piece of municipal property, and council decides to sell that property, that it should be declared a surplus, and that the surplus property should be advertised a minimum of 30 days and listed on the open market for competition, as well as a clear explanation of the future purpose of this property and how the sale of this property will benefit the residents of Queens County. And these bids and explanations should be made available to the public. And I think discussion should be held at public hearings before council makes the final decision. As we have seen just with the airport property and previous sales in the past, the sales of these properties have been determined without competition, and I think we need to make a change.
Other comments? Councilor Charlton?
I would agree with Councilor Miro's comments. I think there's been a lot of people that have said, you know, when there's sales of municipal property that they weren't made aware, and there are lots of people in our community who have great projects and things in mind without particular parcels. So I just think for transparency purposes, that that would be the best way forward to declare it in that way, and it's open and transparent process.
So just to reiterate, if I got this correctly, you're suggesting that if any non-for-profit or any request for any property,
mm-hmm.
regardless of who they are,
mm-hmm.
a request for any property, that's, and council is going to consider that request,
mm-hmm.
that they give notice of their request that they're considering it, or they give notice that the property is surplus.
That's right. I think.
And
I
then
think.
You post 30 days
mm-hmm.
for any interested party, regardless of who they are or where they live.
Mm-hmm.
You allow 30 days for any individual or company or a non-for-profit to make application to purchase that land, stating their intentional use.
Mm-hmm.
And what about the value? Where do we determine, how do we determine the value?
Well, I think we do, as always, have to get the evaluation done of the market value.
Okay. So
I think that has to be done.
So before we post it surplus,
yes,
we first have to have a value done.
Yes.
A market assessment. So if someone
yeah.
came tomorrow, I just want to get this right.
Once council decides that they want to sell it, I think a market value
okay, so
assessment should be done.
Okay, so first they have to have the land appraised.
Yes, we should do that.
And once the land is appraised,
mm-hmm.
then it goes out for 30 days.
Yep, we declare it a surplus.
That
mm-hmm.
the land is for sale. This is the beginning price, because the appraisal would be the lowest, would be the appraised price.
Yes.
If you're interested in purchasing this land, contact XYZ in the region's office, stating your name, your intention, the price that you're willing to pay, and the benefit to the region of Queens of you as the buyer.
That's correct.
And then at the end of 30 days, council would look at all of the offers presented
mm-hmm.
and then decide, A, if they're going to still sell it, and B, if they do decide they are going to sell it, then B, to whom they will sell it to.
I don't think it should be if they're going to sell it. If they declare it a surplus, it will be for sale.
Yes, but you know council can always change their mind at the very last minute. So you can't say, you said at this point in time you're going to sell it, so you have to sell it no matter what. I mean, council could simply change their mind and say it's no longer for sale. Would council have the ability and a policy to state that what they say they could never change their mind on? They wish to question.
Yeah.
We said we're going to sell that microphone, and then we get all kinds of offers in, and then we say, you know what, but we really like that microphone. Do we have to sell it without having a formal sale purchase agreement? That's my question. Yes.
So the request is for a policy. The policy has to be broad enough so that council's not constrained, so that even if council does something, comes forward with a proposal to buy a piece of property, we follow the policy, we advertise it, get into proposals. The policy has to be broad enough that council can reject both proposals, not necessarily accept the lowest one, but accept the one that's in the best interest of the municipality, which is what you're talking
about
here. So the appraisal, the $4,000 or $5,000 for the appraisal really is for the newspaper advertisement. Other than that, it's irrelevant. Because if we're going out to tender, what people are going to offer us is what they're going to offer us. We're not selling it for the appraised value,
mm-hmm.
what we would have done in the past. Now we're taking a best offer, which could be the price or could be the criteria. So to your question, I guess the policy has to be broad enough that council doesn't hamstring itself so that they're forced to do something they don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But do we not have to sell at the market value?
Unless it's to a nonprofit group, yes.
That's right.
Sure.
So would we not need to have
mm-hmm.
the appraised value before we put it out for other
so most of those properties won't go through a formal appraisal, because the actual appraisal of $4,000 or $5,000 is more than what the properties were. So those will go, which, those properties I assume are not included under this.
No.
Councilor Mural, because you're saying only if somebody submits something to us, we go through this process, but if council wishes to, what we've done, declare our own property surplus.
That's right.
Through this process, we just do our own thing.
Yeah.
Councilor Brown?
I have a couple of concerns with this, that if we, if somebody comes to us with an unsolicited offer, they usually have a project that they want to do. And if we open it up for 30 days and let anybody else bid on it, they could be outbid and the project could never happen. Somebody could sit on the property, which can still happen if somebody comes with an unsolicited offer. The same thing happens with a nonprofit. If they come in for an offer and says, look, we'd like to buy this property for a dollar, and then we all of a sudden have a policy that says we have to post it for 30 days, and somebody offers us, another nonprofit offers it for $2 and doesn't do anything, we're opening it up. Like, we do all this stuff because we go in camera, because they're contract negotiations, we're dealing with somebody. I think I'm okay with unsolicited offers being done the way they are, but I think if we offer something for sale, then we have to have a disbursement program. I'd like to see it done two different ways. I just, you know, we've with the airport is one that we approached somebody to buy it, but we didn't put it up for tender. And I think that was wrong, but I think somebody coming to us and asking to buy it and us negotiating in good faith that way was the right way to do it. I'm not sure how I feel about this. I think it's going to open up. It's going to kill more development than it will help, and I think it's going to create more problems than it solves.
Deputy Mayor Fancy?
I think it was an interesting thought. I never ever thought of it that way. Shows you Vicky's a smart person. But we've had too many unsolicited proposals, and that becomes an issue when somebody else decides that they want to have the same piece of land or the same building or whatever, and then we've cut them out of the loop because they didn't even know it was for sale. And you're never ever going to be able to, even with this asset management, be able to get all your surplus lands out there to tell you what's surplus. I think this is an interesting way of saying, if anybody wants to make a proposal on any lands that we own in Queens County, that they can make an unsolicited proposal, but it's going to be tied up for 30 days to get other bids or offers that could come in, and it keeps us, I think, out of somewhat of the hot water, which I think is, we don't want need to get into that anymore. I think we've gone into that too many times. Now, what Councilor Brown's concerns are, which, and I understand, is that all of a sudden somebody says, I'd like to, like I'm a not-for-profit and I want to buy that for a dollar, and they want to do something, and somebody else says, I'm not-for-profit, and they hear about it, and they want to buy it, and they want to pay a dollar or $2, how do we determine? I think it's still going to be back to us to be able to see how it most profits us, whether if it's be a building that they're going to build, or if they're going to use it for whatever it may be. We can be able to determine the value, and most of it will be money value of what they could bring to the community. I think it's still going to be back on us to make that decision, how it deems it doesn't. So I think we're still in the driver's seat. I think it's a safe, I'm okay with it, put it that way.
Councilor Charlton?
I was just curious, in the past, I remember specifically the daycare building be declared surplus. So when that happened, and Chris, I don't know if you were here, but no? Okay, but when that happened, is it possible we could get, what did that look like when that tender went out? Was it for 30 days? What would be the normal time frame for something like that if we declared a surplus and it's not like an abutting small property to a property owner?
Mr. McLeod, could you come to the table and explain the
And
process?
I think,
sorry,
they declared a surplus to tear down.
Okay.
And that was the issue at the time.
I think Mr. McLeod looked after that file.
Mr.
So.
McLeod, could you let us know how the daycare
and
became...
That one was a little bit different, I guess. We were, our council at the time was at the stage of determining the future of that building because of its condition. And at that time, it went for a request for proposals to purchase that building.
Okay.
I think there was
two bids that were submitted for that, and Queens Daycare was successful in that.
Yeah, and so the council at that time would have had to decide out of those two bids that the best use, if you took out the, because one could have been a not-for-profit and a fairly decent offer, and I know that the daycare would have obviously asked to buy for a dollar, in which they did. So the council at that time would have had to take into consideration and decide, which obviously they decided that the daycare was already using it and had nowhere to go, and so they decided that they were best suited for that.
That's right, and that's actually part of the Municipal Government Act for disposal of municipal lands to not-for-profits is to take into consideration the community benefits that that the municipality would receive. And obviously,
right.
They felt that the Queens Daycare was the most appropriate.
So was that building still declared a surplus? You said request for proposals, or is this two different things, Mike?
No, I think to sell properties, the council needs to declare them a surplus.
Okay.
Surplus to municipal needs,
mm-hmm.
and then that enables council to sell those.
Okay. Because
so that's just the formal process,
right,
the council has to take.
So do some of these look different in the case of like the ones that the surplus ones for abutting properties, like I mentioned, where they're really, really small parcels, and those surplus, like would that fall under this? I'm confused, or is this completely separate?
I guess council probably a year ago declared, I think it was 10 or 11 properties as surplus. Some were bigger properties that we look at potentially putting on the open market,
mm-hmm.
but some were of such unsubstantial size that they're really only of the benefit to the money property owner.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at conveying those. So I think it's, you can't just have a blanket
right.
policy. I think
mm-hmm.
you have to look at the particulars of a particular piece of land and
mm-hmm.
have different criteria.
Right. So, Mayor Norman, could we have some maybe criteria come back from staff and what a policy like this could potentially look like so we don't make it difficult, like our CAO has mentioned? Because I think from the public's perspective, developers and people who are not-for-profits, everyone just wants an opportunity to know that their request is being considered. That was the biggest issue with the airport. So I think if we have a process where people can put a request in, say what they want to do, and put an offer in, then I think it's a fair playing field. So if we could develop some criteria around that, I think it would save some headaches in the future.
I know the town of Lunenburg is, but they're very different in their size. So what they've done in the town of Lunenburg, they've looked at all the property they own, every piece of property, which obviously we can't do. They've looked at all the property they own, and then they've come up with a value for it, and whether or not it has any significant use to them in their future. So as people, as they go to sell off some of these properties, and they have reason to say, we're declaring this surplus because of this reason, which is totally outside of what we can do considering how many properties we own.
Yeah.
So the main thing is, so I guess the question is, first, do members of the council believe we should have a policy for selling off property? And I'm saying surplus, because surplus property is property, but for any property that we own,
mm-hmm.
does council feel that if we are going to sell any property that we own, that there needs to be a policy respecting? See a nod,
yeah.
A nod.
Yes.
I think we need to make it clearer, I guess,
mm-hmm.
and
nod.
More transparent.
So three nods.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So council wishes to have to look at some framework,
yeah.
or to have further, and I'm looking at our clerk, who will be working with this, I assume, with our director planning. So I guess what we need is, rather than see that policy right in front
yes.
of us, because for them to spend 20 hours or 40 hours creating a policy, and then when we see it, we go, no, that's not what we want. If they could bring back some framework or some further questions, which they may have of us, to work forward to the creation of a policy, understanding this isn't going to happen overnight. The creation of a policy like this is very important. And so is that what you is to come back with either questions about what it is we really want, or some suggestions on framework, or a bunch of different scenarios, and then bring it back in again for another discussion, so you can guide them through their process.
And I'm sure Mr. McLeod will have more suggestions.
Yes.
It's just, I think that we should get started.
Started.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Councillor Charlton?
I would agree. I think that our staff probably will have some questions, and I don't want to see them spend all this time on a policy for it to come back and not be what people
right.
assume it will be, because we've just kind of had a brief discussion. So I think based off this discussion, our staff can digest it, and then they can ask more questions of us, and we can kind of evolve from there.
Yeah.
And we'll just say in a timely fashion.
Yeah.
Yes.
But they'll be working. Deputy Mayor Fancy?
Yes, as what Councillor Charlton said, and Mike is well aware of that. I know I approached last year, but it was a person who wanted to buy a piece of land, and it just connected to his property, and it was only a small piece of property. We're not going to put that out everywhere to, so it would have to be land that would be less than marketable, not marketable, but be able to build on or something like that.
Yeah,
you know, that could be part of something that could be, it could be instituted into this.
So we're going to leave it at that point in time, mm-hmm. and we'll look towards staff. I know our clerk will be working on this. Mr. Levy, do you have a gist of, and you'll have the minutes, and you can also contact Councillor Romero to get your thoughts and kind of reach out before you actually put everything to paper, kind of get everyone's feelings, and then we'll bring them back for further discussion and get them fine-tuned. Understanding Councillor Brown's point of view, we certainly do not want to thwart developers.
No.
But then again, we need to have a policy that's not so tight that it might prevent something great from happening on our lands. As you know, how the opposition out there will work. However, it's done and said, so that. Ms. Plummer, it's amazing when you look at from 2013, when we were over $1 million in arrears, to 2022, we've got less than 200,000 in arrears.
Yeah, so
yes.
Like I mentioned in the report, the finance staff are doing an amazing job at collections. We've really worked hard on getting the number to where we are. So this tax sale that we had in December, we started with 60 properties. Between the 60 and 45 properties entered in payment arrangements, or they were paid in full. So there are 45 claims to our lawyers, and 10 properties from those were removed, which now is a problem that we're having. I have a list here since Penny and I have started working on this. We've got 35 properties that we've sent to title search that the lawyers have came back and said, no, these require a survey. So there's nothing that we can do with those until, I mean, I could bring it to council to write off, but that's not fixing the problem. That's just putting Band-Aid on it. And I have 87, we have 87 that have came back, just, you know, we have to submit to property online, or there's issues. So we're working on it, but now we're getting to the point where there's a lot of properties that are bad titles. So that's why the one that we're having in March, we've changed to just a tender, because there are not even enough properties there to take it to an actual live auction. But from this live auction, like it says in the report, there were almost $35,000 paying off outstanding accounts. So that was previously recorded as in the allowance for doubtful accounts, the valuation allowance. So I've moved that money to tax recovery, so that's revenue that we've received, and also the properties that would have been paid in full are also in that tax recoveries. There's $293,000 added to the tax sale surplus, so that will be there for 20 years, and there's a court order stating that it's
sell them and free of sales of them, is it through tender? Can we tender properties that we know?
No.
We can't.
Oh, goodness.
So what do we do with these properties that have bad titles, but no one's paying the tax bill, and the taxes keep ringing up on our books, making us look like.
And that's why I brought it to your attention.
So what do we, do you know?
So there were, what was it, like 7 years that there were no tax sales at all. So other municipalities might be faced with this, but also there were a time where none of this was dealt with. So right now, Penny and I are working on one that has been outstanding since 2001. So they've accumulated quite a bit over the years. So we put in the budget for last year, or for this year, additional tax sale costs, because I had a couple surveys done to try to, for the bigger ones, because surveys, the quotes that we're getting back are anywhere from 4,000 to 6,000. So if we take the 35 properties by 4,000, I mean, that's $150,000. That's not okay. So Penny and I have plans, sorry, the tax clerk and I have plans that in the fall we might reduce it to two tax sales next year and really kind of focus on all these problem ones and see if we can work with the planning department and work with PVSC and the registry and see if there's anything that we can do. But there's one, we took it for a survey. They weren't able to survey the property. The lawyer saying you can't take it to tax sale, so our only hope is contacting, I have to contact a surveyor that did a survey on the property 20 years ago and hope that they can help me a little bit. So I can bring them forward to have them written off. That's not going to fix it, but there's certainly no way of collecting it if our legal team is telling us we don't even know if this property exists.
So is that the question about the survey, when we were told we couldn't survey it? Just said that we were told we couldn't survey it. We were going to hire a surveyor, but
they
couldn't find the land.
We hired them, and they spent hours, but they couldn't come up with a plan, no.
Councillor Merrill first.
Can the survey cost be added to the amount to the property when it goes up for tax sale and not
yes.
be recovered?
It or? Can be added to the cost of, yes, it can be formed as lien.
Can it?
Yeah, but also if their properties, it might not be good, we might incur these costs to find out that the property doesn't actually exist. So then it would be an expense in operations.
That'd be Mayor Fancy.
So some of these smaller ones, you're definitely not going to take the time or the money to go and survey.
No.
So they're just going to be sitting in limbo, collecting taxes and showing on our books that...
They'll be showing on our books, but we also update the valuation allowance every year. So they'll be offset, but they'll be showing as a receivable, but also they'll be as part of the valuation allowance.
How can it be receivable when it's taxable and we didn't get any money?
Well, that's
everything that's on, you want to come forward?
Because that just makes us look bad with the smaller, because there's money owing and we're not collecting our taxes, and doesn't make us look good, does it?
Well, it's not because of not, we're not trying.
I know, but I'm not questioning that, but I'm just saying if you had 20 properties and they were $100 and some each, and that you've got all that money going out every year, should be going out for taxes,
mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
it's a loss, because we're not getting that,
mm-hmm.
so it looks like we're losing the money. Then if you write it off, it's gone.
But it's not, we don't write it off. We put it in the valuation allowance. So when they do our FCR, financial condition
yeah.
indicators, they take note of that. But to your point, because these properties are continually listed on our assessment
yes.
roll, the only people that can stop that from happening is PVSC.
Land Registry, because Land
yeah.
Registry gets direction.
Right. So when we get to a point where, like Mallory said, we have a property that no one can help us, like no
right.
one can say, yes, it exists,
right.
then where do we go? And we haven't been, what we need to do, as Mallory says, is focus on these properties and classify them so that we have these are the ones that we need to get removed from our assessment roll and then find out through the land registry and PVSC when we have a group of these, how do we do this? Because they don't exist. But then that's not all of them, because as Mallory said, there's a lot that just need surveys, so they may or may not be non-existent. But do we go to the expense of a $5,000 survey for a piece of land that might not even be worth $1,500? So there's a cost benefit there too. So PVSC is not going to remove those from our assessment roll because we don't want to pay for a survey. So it's kind of a juggle. And because we have not done any tax sale or real collections since, you know, we had that period of 7 years, Mallory and her staff have had to kind of go through it, and now we're playing catch up.
Mm.
Because typically you would be addressing these things every year. There will be certain things that will come up, and then we'd be like, okay, there's 10 every year that we have to go and say, we have to go to the mat and say, okay, who owns this? Why aren't we getting our money? But now we have this list that we need to start working on.
So what are you asking of us?
Nothing.
No, we just wanted to make you aware.
Okay.
So as Mallory said, last year we put some more money in the tax sale costs for surveying, and we're probably going to be doing this, asking the same thing of council this year. And also, Mallory, want to let you know that because we know now that we're so good, to the mayor's point about getting our receivables way down, we're going to be focusing more on catching up with those problem properties over the next couple of years. And that doesn't mean we're going to ignore our collection system, because it's like a well-oiled machine now. Everybody knows there's steps to be taken, so that will still run just fine. But we are going to take more time to focus on those problem properties.
Councilor Gidney had a question.
Yeah, these properties, are they usually raw land, like bare land? That's what we're discussing, okay.
Councilor Brown?
I think you guys have done a great job getting the numbers down. And I know when you've done a great job getting the numbers down. I know when I was on the Lot Owners Association out in LaBelle, we went through a similar process where the assessment rolls came in and we had a lot more lots than we actually owned. And there was a problem with the land registry that there were duplicate PID numbers on lots. And I don't know if that's what you're going to run up against, that it's going to take a lot of time, a lot of effort to get those duplicate PIDs resolved to find out which one actually exists.
But it has to be, to Mallory's point, it has to be done.
Yeah.
Because just writing off the account every year is not going to fix that problem.
No.
It's still going to keep accumulating. So we're not like that. We're like, no Band-Aids for us. Let's just fix it and move forward from there.
But
it might
be
slow, but we'll get there.
I think it shows the importance of staying on top of all these things and not letting the snowball get too big.
Okay, thank you, and look forward to the results of your tendering in the spring. Councillor Brown wished to add discussion, council technology access.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up to council the possibility of councillors getting devices to stay connected to the internet. We're one of the few councils in Nova Scotia that don't have devices supplied by council, and as a lot of us who have our own devices realize that Steve had to do a lot of workarounds to get us on the internet. We've got the little block that we have to click to get the number sometimes. It's caused some issues, and it got me thinking more about it back in November when there was I became aware of a hack attempt on our region website that actually took down our firewalls and had to have them rebuilt. And it made me concerned that we're not protected. We're using our private devices with our personal information, our personal banking, that we could potentially lose access to if somebody hacked the system in a way that took our information. You know, that may not be a big issue, but I think for the insurance that we pay for as a region, we have to put a lot of security on our personal devices to satisfy the the region's insurance providers. I think it would be a lot easier for our IT people to be able to control devices that they actually own. And I think for them to do that would be a good idea. Mm-hmm. Also, if we looked at possibly cell-enabled tablets, it would if we ever had another pandemic or if we have to go to in-person meetings, then you've got the access to be able to go, you know, to connect through virtually for whichever way you want.
So I guess Councilor Brown's point is he believes that because all of our work is fed through electronic means, our correspondence, our agendas, our everything, that he believes that as elected officials, we should not have to be using our personal computer, laptop, to receive matters coming from the region. And I also know that because, I don't know, of last council, if all councilors were provided tablets or not, but I know there were still a couple in existence and a couple councilors, I believe, are still using them. So Councilor Brown simply saying that he believes that the Region of Queens should provide tablets for all of council, for all elected people to use, so you're not using your personal computer or laptop for council business. Councilor Charlton?
I'm a little bit confused because I thought when we got elected that if we needed a device, we were able to access one. Is that not the case? It is the case.
Not the case.
So is Councilor Brown's point more so to that it shouldn't be up to our discretion whether we want one or not? It's that we're just collective in using devices solely for the region?
I was under the impression that there was only some available that hadn't completely broken down that were turned in by other councillors, that it wasn't a new device. And I think Councillor Gidney may have gotten the last one that was available.
Mm-hmm. So I saw Councillor McNeil nod to Councillor Charlton's account.
No, that's not promotion.
I saw Gail McNeil nod to Councillor Charlton's comments. So if Councillor Brown or Councillor Romero or anyone wished a tablet rather than using their personal Mac or personal home computer for council business, then they would be supplied one.
And sometimes they're used ones, sometimes they're new ones,
yeah.
Depends on what's available. So
yeah.
I think someone just turned one in the other day that wasn't using it, a member of council, so come and go all the time. So
okay.
So if anyone so wishes to have their own, I personally think it's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Mac at home, and you know it's loaded more with the council stuff than my stuff, and I just feel we should just keep the two should just be kept separate.
I just wanted to make a comment that I'm not like speaking badly of this. It was my understanding that we could access one if we wanted one, and then I sort of have another question in the fact that should we be concerned about like a firewall and a hack? Like did we officially hear that from our IT? Maybe I missed that.
I guess we'd have to, I think there was a potential or something, but we'd have to, or an attempt.
So if
yeah.
I may very long. So we get phished and attempted hacked, I'd say on a regular basis. I don't think if any large corporation, any government suggested they weren't, they wouldn't be being truthful because we're a large organization. We have people, that's why we have firewalls, that's why we have security and so on and so forth. And so actually our director has doing some work now on getting independent outside assessment of our system to give us some comfort level as well. So you'll see that come forward soon. But if you're using, so if somebody hacks into us, they're only hacking into our data, they're not hacking into your personal data, okay? So if they're hacking into, even if you have a tablet that the municipality provides, you're logging into your email on the tablet, they're hacking into that email system. They're not hacking into whatever you have outside unless they're doing it separately. So I think there's a little confusion over if they get access to your region email, they get access to your whole computer system. They don't. Typically, they don't anyway. But they only get access to the municipal part of it. So if you're logging into your email, they may get access to your email. But it's only if you don't have security on your own personal information that they may be able to sneak through
And I wasn't trying to cause any fear over hacking attempts. It was just something that had happened at the time that I heard that kind of triggered me to think that we should be doing this. But I don't think it's a huge expense to do that, and most municipalities do it. Another concern I kind of had was if you do travel somewheres and you take your information, like your personal phone that you get council emails on, you have to disclose that to the federal government as a security thing at the end of every year. We all get that notification, but this would allow us to keep our work life and our personal life separate at not a huge expense to the population. Because there is I think the plan that the cell phones are on, not everybody has a $55 or $60 plan a month. I think it's part of the provincial plan that.
I think mine's like $25 a month.
Yeah, so it's not the same price, and Steve has told me that if they buy devices, they get good discounts from providers for government offices. I think it's a way to let us keep our personal and private lives separate. And if we had the cell enabled ones, we would be able to put a phone number on there that would be with our region. So when any of us end up not being counselors anymore, that phone number goes to the next person. It's not our personal phone numbers that are online all the time. You'd have more access, more continuity from one council to the next. It's just different ideas.
Okay. So your answer is yes, if you wish to have a tablet separate from, so then
yep.
Everything can be directed to the tablet and not to your home computer, then I guess see Steve.
That's what he's asking. I'm thinking he's asking for a separate phone, which you can use as a tablet.
Yeah.
I think that's what he's asking now.
Yeah.
That wasn't approved before.
No, some of the tablets are cell enabled, so they
can't. Well, that's what he meant when he said cell enabled.
Yeah.
Do we have to change anything here, or if a member of council wishes for a tablet, we just would request it?
Okay. We did it before. I mean,
yes.
I think it was 6, 7, 8 of us that took the tablets the first time. And I still do my tablet. I mean,
so do I.
That's a wise thing to do. And hearing that